In a repeated national survey, doctors in all branches of medicine, doctors in all parts of the country were asked, "What cigarette do you smoke, doctor?" Once again, the brand named most was Camel. Yes, according to this repeated nationwide survey, more doctors smoke Camels than any other cigarette. Why not change to Camels for the next 30 days and see what a difference it makes in your smoking enjoyment? See how Camels agree with your throat. See how mild and good tasting a cigarette can be.
Now, here's a little story I got to tell.
Here we are. We've got something new on the plate with episode number 48. This is Giants Amongst Us, where we share in the unique human experience. And this is where you're going to hear real stories that are told by real people. People just like yourself. If this is your first time tuning in, kick your feet up. Please do stay a while. What we do here is we talk story. We share connections with people from all walks of life that have been through struggle. They've been through challenges, setbacks, and they talk about ways they were able to create changes in their life. What changed? How it changed? So it looks different. It sounds different. It feels different for everybody because, like mentioned, this is a unique human experience. This isn't a one-size-fits-all, but you're going to hear about people who at one point in their life, they decided to start taking accountability and responsibility for their life's experiences. And what these stories are meant to do is to remind you right now, if you're in a dark spot, if you've slipped up once, twice, three times, and your confidence is crushed, your self-esteem is broken, you feel hopeless, you feel helpless, these are reminders from people just like you who have been through maybe not the exact same thing that you've been through, but they've had their dark winters, their trials and tribulations, and were able to come out of it. And so are you. You're no different. So let these stories remind you, inspire you, encourage you that your life has value, that your life has meaning, and you are worth the effort. Hope you guys are doing well. Hope you're in good spirits. Spring is here, so it's about that time to throw some sun on your face. Appreciate you spending some of your day with us. And I want to invite you to check out the website. You can find past stories. Maybe there's something right there that resonates with you and it speaks to you at this time and place and in your current situation. And if anything resonates with you, it strikes a chord with you, you can reach out to us, drop us a line via email, find us on all the social media handles. There's also a means, if you like, to leave a voice message. Let us know where you're listening from, how you're listening to the show, what you like about the show, ways that you think we can improve, because it's about creating the best overall listening experience for you. And it's about doing something meaningful. That's what we're about here. And another thing, what you can do free of charge, it's not going to cost you a dime, just maybe about a few minutes of your time. One way that you can support the show is by leaving a review or a rating. And what that's going to do is two things. One, it's going to help these stories reach the ears of new listeners. And another thing that it'll do is it'll help us on the back end create, like I said, a meaningful, valuable, and wonderful listening experience. So with that out of the way, let's get into it. Today, Jessie joins us, and she's got a story to tell.
I started really young. I started 13, picked up smoking, and just fell into it hard. Kind of became quickly a priority for me. Basically, all my relationships were around smoking. That was my hobby. It became a really big part of my life, my main focus. And it got to a point that I was just kind of using it to cope with like any emotions I had. Anytime, you know, I felt sad, angry, lonely, I would go to smoke. And so it can be real tough with addiction. I think you get locked into these cycles with your emotions.
Ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, this is Jessie and her story. This is always a highlight of my day. Like I always say, every time I speak with a guest, there's different people dealing with different struggles. They come from different places, but this is one of the highlights of my day. And so I'm happy to bring on board today. I have Jessie, who took some time out of her day to have a sit down, share conversations, share some things that are near and dear to her heart, honoring your heart. Going back, I'm sure you're going to talk a little bit about that. But yeah, just thank you, first of all, for taking time out of your day, having a sit down. You could have been anywhere right now. You could have been doing anything, but here we are having a conversation. So welcome. Thank you. And how is it going?
Hey there. Thanks for having me on. I'm excited to be here too. And yeah, I'm doing good. Coming from New Mexico, Albuquerque.
Okay, right on. And today we're gonna talk about something that, like, we had a little breaking the ice beforehand, but something that I would say the high majority of people struggle with, and that's just addiction. It could be pick your poison, different vices for different folks, nicotine, alcohol, cocaine, strip clubs, coffee, whatever it is. But you had your own battles for a very, very long time. And I love the idea behind the book. I just want to throw it out there in the beginning, and I'm going to let you go ahead and talk a bit more about it later on. But Honor Your Heart, when I seen that, that was it was a post of yours that I came across. I seen that, and so I reached out to you, and I said that was something that piqued my interest, and then I looked more into it and seen the message that you're pushing for. So that was something that I think could be beneficial for people that are struggling with addiction, and they feel like they're helpless, and they feel like the they have no power. They feel powerless. And so what you're doing is you're empowering the individuals. So I say all that to say, Jessie, how was it for you with your own addictions? And yeah, if you could just talk a bit about that, your struggles with it, and the many methods that you probably tried once, twice to beat it, to break it, to shake it, and so on and so forth.
Yeah, sure thing. I was in it. Yeah, I started really young. Mm-hmm. I started 13, picked up smoking, and just fell into it hard. Kind of became quickly a priority for me. Just that was like basically all my relationships were around smoking. That was my hobby. It became a really big part of my life, my main focus. And it got to a point that I was just kind of using it to cope with like any emotions I had. Anytime, you know, I felt sad, angry, lonely, I would go to smoke. And so it can be real tough with addiction. I think you get locked into these cycles with your emotions, and you start using it to be able to function. You feel like you can't get by without it. And so I fell into that pretty young.
You said 13. So I'm just curious, where were you able to get your smokes at 13 years old? Did you have certain places where they didn't ID you?
Yeah. So, I mean, I grew up around smoking all the time, all the adults, you know, and so the first one, you know, you're nabbing it off of your family, trying to try it out and see what it's like. And then, you know, you find your ways. You start hanging around gas stations, talking to anybody that walks by, begging. You're going to the ashtrays. Unfortunately, you know, I got a paper route so I could make my cigarette money. Because okay, when I started smoking, it was only $4 a pack. So I was able to get my money that way, to get my smokes. And, you know, you hang out with older people, older guys, get yourself in situations, older brothers, older sisters. Basically do whatever you got to do to get it.
Yeah. Yeah. I know what so, that is when you're outside trying to catch somebody who looks of age and they say, hey, can you buy me a pack of smokes? And I'll give you $2 extra or something to keep the change.
Yep. Yep. Yeah. If there's a will, there's a way. So, I was able to do that. And then, as I got a little bit older, could drive, moved out to California, and they have these things called dairies, and you drive through and you just get what you want. And so those were working for me to get them. And a high school there. So, and then in California, I don't know if this is a statewide thing, but they eventually changed it to 21. So I was able to smoke when I was 18 there. But like when I got into my 20s, the people were able to smoke. All of a sudden they couldn't. They were 18 and then they took it away. So they had to go back to begging. Kind of wild.
Yeah, that's what I thought. I thought it was, I was going to say worldwide, but nationwide, 18, right? The limit? Or is it younger or older in some states?
It was, but they changed it in California, at least. They made it 21.
Oh, is that right? Okay, wow. That must have happened after I left, because I've been away for 6 years now, and that's where I'm originally from, and I always thought it was, I didn't know they had changed the law.
Yeah, I think it was like around 2016, 17, somewhere there, so.
Oh, wow, okay. So you were at a very early age, you were smoking and joking, and my goodness, did that eventually, you know, they say there's always a gateway, usually they say it's marijuana. Marijuana is the gateway to bigger and better things, if you want to call it that. But for you, did that eventually lead to other things?
Yeah, I picked up smoking weed shortly after that and was smoking that daily, got into drinking. And I always think that alcohol is kind of the gateway drug, honestly, because I never said no to anything when I was drinking. So, I mean, those were my three main things. I got hooked on them all together. Yeah. I kept trying to play these games where it's like, oh, I'll only smoke when I drink, and end up drinking more. Oh, I won't smoke cigarettes, I'll just smoke pot. And, you know, try playing all these games with them, but I always ended up just coming back. So ultimately, when I was able to quit, I quit all three together because I couldn't do that moderation game and balance it with it. So, but yeah, it took a long time to get there. I, like you said, like kind of the things I went through trying to quit is, you know, it took me a long time to even want to quit, because I thought I was having fun, but like, you know, after 5 years or so, I'm like, okay, I'm starting to see real effects here, and let me just, you know, put this down and move on with my life. And then I realized, oh, I can't. I need this to function. I don't know how to cope with stress. I don't know how to make friends. I don't know how to relax and be myself without this. And those are the kind of stories I would tell myself. And so that I felt like I really needed it. And every time I would try to go without, I'd end up crawling back to it. So I did that for a real long time. And then, you know, things got worse before they got better. Of course, I went on to be an adult, went to college. And there's a big drinking culture there if you're willing to to get into it.
I believe it.
Yep. And so that was like really tough for me. I was a science major. And so all this time I had been doing really well in school, by the way, too. So it's like, you know, people have this like image in their head. They're like, oh, if you're smoking weed, then you're lazy and you're not smart, all that kind of things. But I was actually excelling really well at school. I kind of got into this cycle where I would work really hard and put all this pressure on myself and do perfect. And when I get those A's and pass the tests and get all the approval, and then I would go really hard on myself with the partying. Like it was like a big pendulum. I was just going from one extreme to the other. Like I'm going to be perfect. And then now I'm going to screw it all. I'm going to go crazy.
So you had the mentality of, it was more of a celebratory thing. You weren't doing it before. You were waiting until, okay, I'll just hold off on it until I do this, this, and this, and then I'm going to go ahead and celebrate and pat myself on the back.
A little bit of that. I mean, with the cigarettes, like I'm just puffing on them the whole time I'm working. You know, the harder I work, the more I smoke cigarettes, for sure. Mm-hmm. Cigarettes were always there. That's like the main backdrop. So
how many packs were you going? Would you go through like a whole pack in a day? Were you smoking that much?
No, I was always at a half pack. Always a half pack. Except parties, you know, that's a different story. I'm smoking them all until I run out. So, but mostly okay. Like I was at a half pack.
Right, right. It was definitely your go-to throughout the day. And then that carried on for years, right? You started at 13, and with the nicotine, you went all the way until your adult years and mid-20s, late 20s?
Yeah, it was 30 was the big moment for me. I'm I attained 30. I'm done with all that. I mean, it was maybe a little bit before then. I didn't count days. I didn't find that was helpful for me. So I actually don't have an exact date. I know some people are wild with the days, and even with nicotine, they'll count how many days it's been, you know, 700 days. Like I just wanted to move forward and let that go. So it was a lot easier for me when I didn't count days. I kind of just took it a day at a time. Like every day I'd be like, okay, I made it one more day. I did today, you know, kind of keeping that small sight helped me a lot with quitting.
Mm-hmm. I think you were getting, you had, because you were talking about, sorry, I kind of threw you off a little bit because you were talking about college and with your studies, you were doing real good in studies, but then you would go ahead and get a little wild after you aced the test or you did whatever you had to do as far as projects or assignments and everything. And I kind of jumped in and asked you some question, but you were carrying on about that.
Yeah. So I was talking about the science. So
there you go.
Yeah. That I got really depressed about that kind of stuff. I thought that life was kind of meaningless. I got kind of caught in this Darwinism mindset where it's like, hey, we're all just here by accident. Nothing really means anything and nobody's connected. And if you can't see it, if you can't measure it, then it's not real. And it's all about competition and survival of the fittest. And that put me in a real dark place, a real dark mindset, because I felt like I had nothing to offer and I didn't really see the point in life. And so that was like holding me big time with addiction, because I didn't see any reason to not do what feels good right now because we're not going anywhere. I really honestly, when I look back, it's like I didn't really care if I lived or died at that point. It's let's just see what happens. It's all an experiment kind of thing. So that really was rough for me.
Mm. That was on account of your studies, learning about science and then filtering the way you've seen your worldview, your perspective on life.
Yeah. And the environmentalism stuff can be, man, it can really drag you down when you look and you see what's happening to the world and seeing how there's nothing you can do about it. No matter how many numbers you get, you know, people haven't stopped polluting or, you know, hurting the animals and hurting nature. And, you know, I had one professor that told us, he's like, if you want to have kids, don't, because they're not going to have a future worth living in. I mean, that's kind of,
oh my God,
messages we were getting. Yeah.
What does that do for somebody?
So it makes you give up.
But did you, like, when you're in college, you're learning all of this, this is what you're being fed every time you're sitting in class and listening to the professor talk, was there something inside of you at any time feeling as if I think there's something different and I think there's something more to it? Like, you know, you had a little internal battle to where you were hearing this, but you were feeling and hoping, maybe just hoping, that there was something more to it than what you're being told.
Yeah. I mean, I've had a pretty good sense of intuition my whole life, but I would always fight it. I mean, honestly, when he says that, it makes me want to laugh. I guess maybe sometimes you laugh so you don't cry, but it's like, that's extreme. That's dramatic. That can't be where it's all at. But, you know, when you're looking at the numbers, it looks bad. And, you know, they have the models. Who knows how those models are right? Like, science has become a dogma. It's not about having an open mind, having imagination and testing things, you know, from a distance just to see what happens or coming up with new ideas. It's about proving what we want to, the narrative we want to. And so those models are very limited, but people act like this is it. This is the future. This city is going to be below sea level and all these things, like we know what's going to happen. But I think it's a little bit egotistical in my opinion now, but I got really lucky. Later on, I was like listening to a guy talk on the radio. His name is Michael Mead. And he was like telling stories and talking about words and what they meant. And it sounded really interesting. And so I went to go check him out. And I thought it was going to be like an academic lecture. So I was like, okay, I'm going to go here. I'm going to learn something cool. And it was completely transformative for me. We came in, we sang a song, he played drums, he told myths, he told me that I had a purpose, that I had a soul, and used these ancient stories and ancient knowledge to frame that context. And it just hit, like you said, that feeling that you get, it hit me right in the heart. I felt like this is true, this is right. And, you know, maybe there's something more than just this surface level, working hard, paying bills, competing, you know, tearing everybody apart. There's something here that I could feel in the room, that people are connected and that we're meant to share our gifts with each other and help each other. And so that kind of like cracked me open a little bit to maybe being more open-minded about something else, because I had bad experience with religion. And so I knew that wasn't going to work for me, but this felt different. It just felt like it was right for me and that it's been true all along. You know, yeah. This is like old ancient stuff, these stories. It's really, really cool. So I started looking into the myths and reading more about it and seeing my life a lot differently. And that started motivating me to really work on the addiction stuff. And then meanwhile, things were getting worse for me physically. I was getting like gum disease. I was feeling sick, really low energy, like, you know, my hair, my skin, everything was kind of coming to a head with that. Like I was about to lose my teeth. I was having surgeries and it was getting real, real bad. And so I'm like, okay, I got to actually try this more than I have been. And so I kept trying to quit, but it wasn't easy. So I would go, you know, a few days, a few weeks, sometimes a few months, but I would always end up going back. And so I started just being really curious, like, what is this? Well, how do I, this little pack of cigarettes have such a hold on me that I feel like I need it. I need it. I need it. That's the kind of thoughts I would have. I started paying attention to the thoughts and I was like, why do I need it? I just started being kind of curious. And then I was able to start linking certain thoughts, certain emotions to the cravings. And I understood, because I was going through those first few days of physical withdrawal, that the addiction was definitely more of a mental game, that it was not this physical addiction where I was like tied to it. And it's just, you know, withdrawal is hard. That's why you end up coming back in the first few days. But once you get past that, it's a mindset, because I would come back months later.
Prior to that, I'm sure multiple times, and you tried probably everything, everything in the book. And so all of that was falling through. And once you started to look at it from a point of view of what is in this that is making me always go to it, what is it? And so you started to look inward and figure out that this is more mind than everything. So with that, I'm just curious, because I asked you this beforehand and I just want to get your take on it or your opinion, being that you've struggled with addiction and you found what's worked for you and you're still nicotine free, alcohol free, I would say, since then. So how do you feel about when people call addiction a disease rather than a learned behavior?
Yeah, I think that's a common thing because of the science. Like I said, we have the science informing us.
Trust the science. Yeah. How dare you question it? And see, it is like science has became the new religion, because how you mentioned before, at once upon a time, you measure things, you can challenge it. If something comes up that is through measurement, through observation, if something comes up and it counters that, then you have a new maybe a hypothesis, or you have a new conclusion until something else comes up. But they made it to the point now where it is just drawn in the sand, and how dare you question it? How dare you wipe it clear? This is what the science says. And if you question it, it's almost like you hear the preacher saying, if you question my teaching or this doctrine or this book, you're questioning God. How dare you?
Yeah. And the doctors are the new preachers.
There you go. Wow.
So they're telling you, you know, this is a stupid choice. Why would you do this? They use fear. They use shame. You're going to get cancer. You know, this is terrible for your health. Why are you doing this? Take this pill, take this patch. That's going to make it better. They treat the smoking as the problem. And that if you just get rid of the smoking, then you're all good. But like I said, I was coming back months later. So it was more than that, just having my levels of nicotine. The first 3 days are the hardest. You get most of the nicotine out. About after 3 weeks, you're good. It's a really quick thing to get out of your system, unlike some other stuff. So that's not where it's at.
Once you realize that this is something, this is more of a mental thing. Once I get past these withdrawals, how did you change your mindset, or what did you find that you started to feel your mindset or your, because you also, was this during the time when you came across this, the spiritual retreat or the spiritual, this get together that you had? And so everything was kind of clicking and falling in place.
Yeah, that was the start of it. So it took about like 5 years for me to integrate it and really come into self-love and self-acceptance. But what started working for me was kind of moving away from that shame, fear based stuff that, like I said, that a lot of smoking cessation programs do, that the doctors do. And seeing that I was kind of doing this thing where I was like bullying myself and using willpower. I was like, well, why do I want to do this horrible thing for me? Like, what's wrong with me? That's kind of the framework that I was always working from, that there was something wrong with me and I needed to fix it. And instead of doing that, I just started looking at it differently. I was asking myself, what do I think I'm getting out of this? And really paying close attention to that, thinking, you know, I must be getting some kind of benefit or I wouldn't keep coming back. So I was thinking like, oh, you know, this is a stress relief for me. This helps me focus. This helps me connect to people. This helps me be more relaxed and more likable. Those were the kind of things that were really there underneath the surface. It wasn't that I was stupid. It was that I really thought I was getting some benefits out of it. And then I started to test those benefits. So a lot of people, you know, they go back to smoking. It doesn't feel great. You feel like you failed. You're disappointed. You feel like you're helpless, that you're just doomed to do this. But I started using those going back moments to actually test the thing that I wanted. I'm like, I can't handle this stress. Let me smoke and see if that helps. And then I would smoke and I'm like, I'm still stressed. It didn't do what I thought it would do. And so that's how I was able to start chipping those beliefs, and where I was putting the smoking up on a pedestal, that it would somehow fix my problems and make my life better.
I think a lot of people can, if they were to allow themselves to get honest, to get quiet, and to, like, you experiment. This is the science part of it. You're observing, you're recording, you're measuring. Okay, what are the benefits and what am I getting out of it? Let's see. Let's observe. Let's go through it and see if it's actually something that is beneficial or not. And then you start just weighing out the pros and the cons. And like you said, you went back to it and you were still stressed. So what is it really doing for me?
Yeah. And then I was also able to link the thoughts I was having about myself and the emotions I was having to cravings as well. So I was able to see what was the thing that kind of like led me to that. And a lot of the stress was coming from the way I was talking to myself, the negative self-talk, where I would tell myself things that, you know, you're not good enough, no one likes you, you need to work harder. Just like this really crazy drill sergeant bully kind of mentality that I was using that was working well for me in the competitive environment, in school, in work, but was actually making me turn against myself and not have respect and love for myself. And so I started working on those too. And I used affirmations a lot in the beginning. I still use affirmations. They're great. It was hard. It was so hard to say I love myself, to look at myself in the mirror and say that and think that. And so it was awkward. It was weird, but I kept with it and started to really believe myself and fall more into that. And it felt good. I felt more motivated, more empowered, just happier, and able to kind of actually work at the problems that I thought smoking was fixing. When I was being kind to myself and being loving to myself, I had less stress. I had more focus. I connected more with people. So I found that I was able to find within my heart all the things that I was looking to smoking to fix for me.
You hear about the word synchronicity, and then just some of the things that I've been dealing with, going through, and even a video that I made, but I ended up wiping it down because I felt like it was just too long. So I could have packaged it a little shorter. But this is having to do with honoring yourself, loving yourself, respecting yourself, and how we can have that negative self-talk about ourselves. And it could come from a lot of different places and for a lot of different reasons. And just getting to that. And I have to ask you, is that part of, well, not even part, but like a big inspiration behind the whole title of, you've written the book and the title of it is Honor Your Heart. Like I mentioned when we started recording about the title and how that drew me and that piqued my interest. Because when I heard it, the first time I heard it, Honor Your Heart, that reminded me of going back to religion. When you hear people, religious people, and that could be, it could be beneficial, I think, even people in the, just who respect themselves as a human being. And I feel like that we're spiritual beings having a human experience. What I was going to say was Honor Your Heart reminding me of how there are some people that follow a certain religious doctrine, or they feel as if they're living for God. And so this is the temple. This is the temple of God, and you should honor it. So the way that you live, what you eat, what you put into your body, how you live your life. And so when I heard Honor Your Heart, or when I read Honor Your Heart, that kind of reminded me of it. I don't know if it has, you know, some similar, you know, correlations to just honoring your, if once you honor yourself and you connect back to your being, then you're also going to show that with your actions, with your doings, what you invite into your life and, you know, your habits and things like that.
No, that's interesting. I'm wondering about that feedback, what people think when they hear that. So that's kind of funny to me because I'm definitely not coming from that honor your body, honor thy mother and father kind of perspective at all. With the heart, I didn't know this forever, and I think a lot of people are missing this in modern society, that we're not our brains. Our minds are a tool for us to use, and we are so much beyond that. The mind is there for us to survive. It collects information. It observes. It makes lists. It plans. It's, you know, always going, always working, and that's great for survival. But when you're in that all the time, you're going to have anxiety. You're going to have stress because we need something more centered and more grounded. And there's this entire way of thinking and living, and it comes from the heart. And we have just a knowing from it. It's amazing. It's intuition where you just know what's right. You know what's wrong. And you can fall back on that. You don't need a religion that has all these rules. You don't need to learn this in school. You just need to tap into yourself that knows exactly what you need for yourself. And when you ignore that, then you can end up having some really weird behaviors. And that's what happened to me. I was cut off from myself. And that's really what addiction is to me. It's you're not in touch with yourself anymore. So you're not doing what you actually need, even though your body's telling you, you know, hey, stop this. You get all these messages and you ignore them because your mind is taking over and your mind says, no, I need this because of this. It makes all these rules, it makes all these patterns, and it keeps us limited. So by honoring your heart means honoring your true needs, your true self, and living from a place of love, compassion, forgiveness, all these things that don't really come from the mind. They're not logical, but they're so part of what it means to be human. And ancient people knew this. I feel like we've forgotten how to be human. And that's why we have these modern problems of addiction. I mean, I'm sure addiction has been around forever, but not in this kind of magnitude, this kind of scale, and without support, honestly, from the community. So I think that if we turn back to our hearts, we can get back to where we belong and where we want to be. And it's able our ability to connect to each other. And that's what honoring your heart's about.
That's a beautiful take on it. And I 100% agree that we have that innate ability, that the divinity within ourselves, we have that, but we've lost it. We've allowed other things to get in the way and to separate us from it. And mm-hmm. It seems like for all the good of technology, like we have, you know, we're able to talk right now. I'm able to speak with you and we're able to connect like you are with people worldwide. But also a lot of this is being weaponized to take us away from self and to kill our intuition and our trust in self, because now we're just outsourcing all of this power, this godly-like power that we have within ourselves, even the body's ability to heal itself, if you give it some time, just that innate ability to start healing itself. If you're working in relationship with nature, with yourself, and the way things should be, like you said, the ancient civilization, pre-industrial civilization, the Aborigines, old Native Americans, you know, the ways that they've lived, people in the Amazonians, and they understand that. And I think a lot of people now are seeing that and they're exploring it, they're experimenting with it, and they're realizing it, they're experiencing it in their own lives. And I like that message with getting back to self. And I feel like we can app ourselves to death, or we can app ourselves out of knowing who we are, because now we're instead of just getting back to ourself, getting back to source, we need an app for this, or we need an app to tell us this, or when to sleep, when to start moving, or, you know, everything is just being outsourced.
Yeah. So overwhelming, so loud, so confusing. And so it's not any shortcoming that we get disconnected. It's easy to, and I have to bring myself back because, you know, I'll get lost. I like to look into like Buddhism ideas. They're really, really neat and really helpful to me. And so there's that idea of the monkey mind, and the monkey mind's like, you're just swinging from thought to thought. You don't stay still. You're always planning. You're always making lists. You're always doing, you know, goals, accomplishments, and checking things off and judging things. And that, I feel like it just makes me crazy. And that's why I would smoke. I can't handle this. But once I was able to kind of let go of those things and understand that I really wasn't even my thoughts, and that I can kind of use my thoughts just to align with things that feel good and feel right, but it's not who I am. And it's easier to get detached from that kind of stuff and just kind of let it go, or just be curious. I really like that place of curiosity. Like, oh, that's interesting. Like, you know, is that true? And kind of just being more open-minded to things. And it's just helped me feel a lot better and have more joy, have more peace.
So once that started to, well, you said it took about 5 years for you to finally integrate it. So it was a process. It was a process of you going through what you were going through mentally, spiritually, to start to realize that I'm more than my thoughts, and just turning that direction inwards and getting back in touch with yourself, learning how to love yourself again, how the affirmations. That brings up something that I was always curious about, because I've tried this. I'm more open to it now these days, but this is something that I do like after my, what I've started to do. And it's been about, well, I'm counting it now. I'm like counting the days. It's 31 days where I've been doing breath work religiously every day. And so this has been with my own struggles with the alcohol, because I've dropped a lot of pretty much all of the other toxic poisons in my life, but I still have that love and hate relationship where I would drink here and there, and you try to justify it. Oh, it's just on a weekend. It's not real. But with this breath work and me using this and practicing this and just wanting to do it, and what it's done for me up until this point, every single day, that I don't even have a desire for alcohol. I don't have a urge for it. The weekend has passed more than a few times since my last drink, and I just feel like I can do better. I feel like I don't need it. So why pick up a bottle? Why? What I was going to say was the affirmations, because that's something that after my sessions, sometimes it'll be a quiet time where it's just a meditation, and that there would be affirmations that I would tell myself or repeat to myself. For you, how do you feel that works? Or because some people just feel like you just say it and that is going to be your reality. And I've also heard people like you, you gave a reference in your book, and I mentioned it in an email about Greg Braden. I think that's how you say his name. But he talks about, like, it is one thing to just say it, to repeat it, but you have to feel it deep down. And so when you feel it, whether you start to create these emotions and these chemicals inside of your body as if you already actually have it, you're already there, you're experiencing it. And so I just want to get your take on the whole affirmations thing, if you don't mind.
Yeah, so I think that's great with the breath work. I actually just tried breath work for the first time a couple of weeks ago, and oh my goodness, I quite the intense.
It's a game changer.
I had no idea. I had completely downplayed it before I went in. I didn't know what I was in for. So that was amazing. I'm definitely going to be practicing more of that. And I feel like I really liked what you said there with you just don't want to anymore. Because I think that's what's really helpful too, is what are your real needs here and how can you meet them in other ways other than, you know, self-destruction, which doesn't really meet them. It's an attempt to meet it. So it feels like you're meeting your needs now, and that's why you don't want it. So I think that's a really good place to look at addiction. Like, what do I really need and how can I actually get what I need here? But yeah, the affirmations, I think that when I started, I didn't believe it. And I kind of just had to get comfortable even saying it, because I had so much baggage with that, with the self-love. I thought that it was selfish and conceited, and that it meant that, you know, I was this, you know, kind of jerk person. And so I had to like work through saying it and practice saying it and be open to like, well, maybe it's not true, but maybe it could be true someday. And so that's honestly where I started. But then as I started to say it and I started to, you know, live it, do things that made me feel good about myself, you know, quit, you know, cause the biggest gain for me from quitting smoking, you know, the doctors are going to list all these like, oh, you got added 5 years to your life and all that kind of number stuff. But what really was for me was the confidence. And I got kind of addicted to that confidence, if you will. Like, I love the feeling that I had about myself when I wouldn't smoke. And so as I was going without smoking, I got more confident. I'm saying these self-love affirmations and they started to feel more true, more attainable. Yeah, I was putting more feeling into it. And then it just kind of came true. I would have all sorts of affirmations and now they're just like part of the way I think. I was able to change the way I think with these affirmations. So I would have a craving to smoke and the first thought I would come to stop at is, and I knew it was true because of these experiments that I'd ran, but I would tell myself smoking doesn't help. And I just would do that every time. And that every time I would have a craving, I would say smoking doesn't help. And then the cravings get fewer and far between. And I went a very, very long time without a craving at all. But I actually had one recently, maybe a month ago. And it freaked me out because I was like, oh man, I thought I was over this. But I had a very distressful situation. I felt the walls closing in. And that wiring in my brain went, oh, I need a cigarette to get to feel better, to be okay with this. And the first thought I had was smoking doesn't help. And that helped bring me back. I was like, well, I'm not going to go out and smoke because of this. So affirmations can work for you in all sorts of ways like that. But I get what Greg's saying. And I believe that too, that it helps to, the phrase I've heard is treat and move your feet. Cause like spiritual mind treatment as a process that I've kind of went through for like manifesting and tried out. And the idea is that you can't just say something and, you know, put it up to God and hope that it comes true. You're not just waiting around. You're trusting, but you're actually doing something in your life to make that possible, action, to open it up, that possibility. And that's what I was doing with not smoking. You know, I was saying, I love myself. And then I was doing the work to show that, to prove that to myself. And it became true. So I think that's kind of how the manifesting works. I don't quite have it down, Pat. I feel like I'm lucky.
No, that
most
makes
of the
sense.
Time, I just feel very, very lucky. I've, you know, try to destroy myself sometimes. So many times I can't even believe I'm here talking to you. So I feel like I've been watched over and protected and am just blessed. I don't know if I can give myself the credit, but maybe, I don't know. I'm trying to get better with it because who doesn't want more abundance and good things in life? So.
Mm-hmm. No, I think you're on point with what you said right now. Especially, we can all just take a look back and just think of how many times we self-sabotaged ourselves before doing something, before going into an interview, before meeting up with friends, before going out or something. And lo and behold, in your mind, everything that you thought that your worst fear becomes a reality. You end up going, there's been a lot of times now, if you reverse it, and if you're doing the complete opposite, you're speaking yourself up, you're thinking of good things, you have a promise, you have a motivation, you have drive, you have something that is just a whole lot more promising that you're thinking of, that you're chewing on, that you're just completely feeding yourself psychologically, spiritually, you're feeling it deep down in your deep downs. And what happens is that creates opportunities. Like you said, if you're moving in action, if you're acting upon it, if you're acting as if maybe you already have it or you're acting to attain it, things start to open up. I mean, there's been a lot of times where, going back to intuition, where you feel like you're going against it. I can just relate something when, and it's still as if it happened yesterday, but when I had, let's see, was it my first or my second? I think it was my first, because I have two, this is many, many moons ago, but I had two DUIs, and I think it was my first one. And I remember that day I was telling myself, I don't need to go out today. And I just had a feeling, and I just kept telling myself, why am I going? And I eventually went out and we got together, we had some drinks, and just, I didn't want the night to end. And what ended up happening, I ended up getting pulled over. Thank goodness I didn't hurt anybody in the process. But that's just one example. I'm sure you have a lot of examples, and anybody thinking back, they have so many different examples of either us self-sabotaging ourselves before something happens in our mind mentally, and it ends up happening, and going against intuition when that's your gut, that's your heart, that's you telling you. It's that voice, and the more we ignore it, the more we put it down, the softer it gets. So we have to be careful of that.
Yeah, and it can help us in the opposite way too. It's not all just danger and warnings, that it can actually lead you to something good. Right. You're like, I'm kind of scared to do this thing, but I feel like I should. I don't know why. And you go and you do it and good things happen. So it can pull you towards wonderful, amazing things too.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, exactly. It's not always a negative hunch that we need to listen for. It's also that voice, some say it's the, you know, they can liken it and say people that are coming from a religious background, that's God speaking to me. And others say that's you. That's the real you.
Yeah. I think it comes from the heart, because it's not logical. Like you said, you're sitting there wondering like, why wouldn't I go out? What are you talking about? You know, the brain will outwork it if you let it. So I just try to go with my heart now. It's like, well, I don't know why. I don't need to know why. I just need to do what it feels right. It's a feeling.
So this is something that you're having a lot of success with, you know, applying this to your life, like you mentioned, integrating what was once experienced some years back in that meeting with the drums and just bringing this to life. And you started to just water the seeds more and more.
I feel like I'm the real me now. And I'm so much more freer. Like you were talking about not having that need to drink. That's how I feel now, because I can just be me. It was that disconnect that was really just making me want to hurt myself, making me not care. So I feel like now that my heart can lead me to do what I really want to and just ignore everyone else's opinion and advice. And because that stuff is, it might work for them, it might not work for you. So you got to listen to yourself.
Have you ever heard that term, fake it until you make it?
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you think, is that like having to do with affirmation? Say how in the beginning you were taught, you mentioned, or to share love to yourself, or to point the love and positivity, some good wholesome thoughts directed to yourself when you were having a hard time doing it, but you were still going through with it. Is that, do you feel like that kind of has something to like fake it till you make it?
Yeah, that's kind of it. But I don't know. There's another way to look at it. Cause instead of feeling like, oh, I'm faking this, you can kind of like connect to the version of yourself that you want to be, like what you're moving towards, and just start being that person instead of being like, oh, I got to do all this work. I got to just like, what would that person be like? And it's like, well, that person would love themselves and take care of themselves and connect to that. Well, I could be that.
The only reason I asked you that was I get what you're saying about it. And I don't know why it came to mind, but I know for a fact that it's faking it till you make it. It sounds superficial, but to me, that's just like, even if you, some people, business gurus or something, that they, you know, they say you have to dress the part, you have to feel the part, and eventually you are going to be the part. And in a way, that's just, yeah, you're talking yourself up. Like you said, after a while with you doing that, and then it started to feel real, like it was genuine. It was coming from a good place, and you were connecting on a deeper level than it just being just mere lip service.
Yeah, it's a way to stick with something when it's uncomfortable, because it's hard. A change is hard. Nobody wants to do anything that they're not used to. And I don't think that we can really get anywhere or grow anywhere if we don't go somewhere where there's resistance. And so maybe the fake it till you make it can help you kind of get through that. Like, you know, you can see your vision of where you're going. Because yeah, it's hard in the beginning. I talk about that too in my book. I talk about the bardo. It's a Buddhist idea where it's kind of like the in-between. And we see it all the time in life and nature, you know, when the day turns to night, it's like, is this day? Is this night? What is this? It's like this weird place where you're moving on from who you used to be, but you're not where you want to be. And you kind of just get lost and you don't know who you are anymore, because we wrap so much of our identity into our addictions. It's like, I'm a smoker. This is who I am. And when you don't have that anymore, it's like, who am I? Which is kind of great. Mm. It's scary, but it's actually a great thing, because we put on this ego. It's just this shell. It's just this thing. It's not who we really are. We use it to protect that vulnerable, open heart, and so that we can gain acceptance and gain belonging. But it's something that can change. And so I think people get lost, or at least I did, is that this is who I am and this is what I am about. And it's more fun if you can change, it's something you can try on and take off and do something different. And it just opens up your possibilities. There's so much more potential in life if you're not set in a personality.
That's a beautiful way to put it. Like this whole journey with you and learning that, being stripped pretty much of everything that you thought you were, and then piecing yourself together again and who you actually are, embracing that and getting to know that. When did you start to tamper with the idea or feel the need to start writing and packaging a book? Yeah, how did that kind of come into play?
Yeah, so I got initiated into motherhood, and that was a wild ride. Everything I thought I knew about myself was turned upside down. That's life. We got to keep growing. Yep. Yeah, I started just seeing the world a lot different with her. She is, my daughter has opened up my eyes in so many ways, just the amazement and wonder that she looks at the simplest things with has just really inspired me. It started making me feel creative and wanting to write like I did when I was young and had kind of just completely forgotten about that part of myself, and was just writing to understand, to process, to feel. And what kept coming up for me again and again was my addiction and the things that I had learned from it, the gift it had been to me, because of all this strength and power that I had come into. And I could draw on that to do hard things the rest of my life, to be a mother, to do whatever comes my way now. And so I just felt compelled to write it down into a book. And so I wrote a book. It's not a memoir. It's more like a guide, just using some of the ideas, some of the practices that I use that helped me center to myself and meet my needs and work through some really, really heavy stuff that was all in the subconscious. It took me 30 years or whatever to get aware of these things and to actually have the courage to face them and work through them instead of try to push them away, because that's what I was doing with the smoking. Anytime I had like an unwanted emotion or thought or feeling, I would stuff that down, smoke. And so to stay stopped and keep going deeper with it, I had to work through some of that stuff. So it's going to be hard if you have limited awareness or you don't know what tools you can have to get through that, some of that stuff. I'm sure you know about that, going that direction too.
I was going into the beginning of it, like that. I told you earlier on that I just love the way it was packaged. It just looks like you put some heart, you put some soul into it, from the artwork, the symbol. I like that. I thought it was creative. And also the glossary section, you have all the words. So you break it down into just to get people familiar with the terminology. And then you, like, I haven't started chewing on every single page yet, but it looks to be something that you put a lot of heart, you put a lot of soul, and this was packaged very, very well. And it comes from a real place. So I'm looking forward to getting into that, because a lot of just the thought of bringing people back to intuition, to self, for one, and then also the fact that we do have power over the addiction, and we're not completely powerless, because I hear that often. And it could be discouraging for some. And what do some people do? They're not addicted to maybe heroin, or they're not addicted to crack cocaine or fentanyl anymore, but then they're addicted to whatever pills being prescribed to them, because now this is going to keep them from going back to what they were using. But it's just trading one substance for the next. So it's not really getting to the root of why you are constantly going back to this vice. And I'm weighing out, like, that's something that I had to get honest with myself about when I was doing the breath work. And it was just the fact of the alcohol, because it was a little experience, something that happened before I found the breath work, or the breath work found me, however that worked out. But something that happened before, and it had to do with alcohol. And then I had to get honest with myself and start taking note of what good have I gotten from it throughout all this time that I've been drinking, even if it's not like it once was. And then let me compare that to what all the negative net results that I've received. And I could still probably be writing this list out of everything that went wrong, went bad. But I'm not going to blame the alcohol, because I feel like that's a crutch. It was my choice, my decision to constantly go to it because I wanted it. Because that's something that it brings to mind. And I don't know how you feel about it. When people that are addicted, you know, especially fentanyl right now is the huge thing. But you hear people that are addicted, and they say they have all these reasons why they want to quit, but they can't. They feel like, and it may go back to how you said you, once you get past the withdrawals, it's all a mental thing, but they feel as if it's a physical need and there's no way that they're able to overcome it. And that's just, I guess, going back to how you can feel powerless. You can feel as if this has a complete control over your life, but it's that physical part that a lot of people are not willing to face, confront, and get past.
That's your body trying to talk to you. That's how I see withdrawal. Mm. I went cold turkey several times, like, so I got used to this kind of process, and it's like hitting a wall. You feel awful. And I use that to motivate me. I'm like, wow, this is really having an effect on my life. This is not okay. Because you get, when you're caught in the cycle, you're like, oh, this is just normal. I just do this and my lungs hurt and I cough. And, you know, like you just accept these things. But when you start going through your withdrawals, you have to face the fact that, wow, I'm really in a lot of pain and doing damage from this. So I kind of use that as motivation for me. And to me, it's kind of like ripping off a Band-Aid too. You know, just don't you want to get it over with? You know, with the patches, it just goes on forever. you're still, every time you put a patch on, you want to smoke. So why not just do it and get it done? That's the way I've looked at it. But whatever works for you. But that's not the way that I wanted to do it. I wanted to be done. I wanted to move forward in my life and quit framing everything to smoking.
Yeah. And you're empowering yourself with that. You're taking back control and you're rewriting the script. There's a lot of studies about that with the neuroscience and how you're able to rewire your brains and just break old conditions, old programs, and then write a new story. And it seems like what you're doing and the message that you have in your book and in just your philosophy in life and you experimenting with yourself and going through it, the discomfort and everything. And you brought, it seems, all you've tapped into that powerful source that we all have inside of us, and you tapped into that, and you're nourishing it, and you're being led by it now. You know, you're embracing it.
Yeah, everyone has it. It's not a personality. Everybody has power, and everybody has worth. I think that I got caught up in that a long time, was that I had to prove that I was worthwhile. And so that's why I was working so hard and doing all these things and running myself ragged and being so harsh on myself, because I wanted to be better. I wanted to be worthwhile. And then I realized that I have worth for just being, and so does every person. And if we can tap into that worth, it can just help you take better care of yourself and have more just like peace, letting things be that are, instead of always trying to change things and make them better and do that crazy monkey mind stuff. So.
You had the inspiration, that fresh perspective with the birth of your daughter. And you said also it was like that creative energy that started to run through you again.
Yeah, I think, you know, she's my greatest creation. It changed me. I got open to imagination and creativity again, which I had lost touch with that. I hadn't had that in my life since childhood. It's something that's magical. And that comes from the heart too. It's like I said, these things that you can't think, they're just felt. When, you know, somebody paints a picture, that's coming from the heart. That's not coming from the mind. I mean, I guess you could sit there and plan it and do all those kind of things, but like just that flow state where everything just feels right and natural and easy, that's a heart feeling. And so I was getting that in my life again with her. And yeah, it's been beautiful, beautiful journey. I feel like I finally got my initiation. I think a lot of me going into partying and that whole route was me looking for initiation. I was at that time where I really needed to be part of a community and understand what it meant to be an adult and find an identity. And smoking did that for me, but it wasn't nourishing and it wasn't genuine. So I feel like having my daughter help me get initiation. We have initiations all throughout our life too. I'll have more to come, but it was such a spiritually meaningful thing for me. And I'm very, very grateful.
That's heartwarming to hear. I'll tell you that, just to hear that, the love and appreciation that you have for your daughter and the respect and how you view it, because yeah, that is a creation. That's a masterpiece right there. And it's great to hear when parents, when they have that love, the love is there, because as we know, I mean, children are our future. There's some going back to indigenous cultures and some ways of life, ancient ways of life, they view people and their actions and their behaviors, with each other, with the world around them, that do it as if you're looking out for the next seven generations. So when you have people that are really like for you, the love that you have for your daughter, and you know, that's what we need more of, children growing up to be nourished, to have that support, to have that strength, to have that love. And eventually they're able to have the confidence to embrace who they are and deal with the world around them in a healthy way.
Yeah. I want her to have an easier time than me, but, you know, we all got to walk our own path. Some of us got to learn the hard way. So, you know, I used to have a lot of regret.
That's right.
But now I see everything I went through as meaningful, and it helped me be the person I am. And I actually like where I am. So it worked that way out for me. And there's still lessons to be learned and depths to go to. And I my daughter has taught me, she teaches me every day. So the things that I learned to get through overcoming addiction, I can still go deeper with her. Like, I'm learning more patience, more love, more forgiveness for myself. And I'm doing this new thing that's been really working well for me, is that I've been mothering myself. So like the way that I talk to my daughter is the way I try to talk to myself now. Cause that self-talk is so, so important. And so I am gentle with myself. I'm patient with myself. I forgive myself. I try to do those things, because that inner voice still is there. It hasn't gone away for me, but I've learned to not let it run my life. I'm like, okay, I heard you out, but we're not doing that. I'm not going to be, you know, going crazy on the hamster wheel here, trying to prove myself or get validation or all those things that I can hear that inner voice push me to do. And a way that's been helpful for me is to mother myself with that. Just, hey, take it slow. It's going to be okay. Proud of you. You know, all those things. Mm-hmm. So, there's just more and more to learn. Like the things that I talk about with addiction, you can apply it to any part of your life, anything you're going through. It doesn't have to be just doing addiction.
Mm-hmm. Going back to that, I'm sure you have your own methods, you know, what worked for you in Honor Your Heart, your book. You know, I'd just like to know if there's one practical thing somebody can, I know you talked about it's a mental thing. I mean, you do have to want it, and it does, you know, start with the individual, and they have to get real with themselves and get honest with themselves. But if there's one practical thing or something that if someone is like, I really, really want to cut this out, but I'm just not able to do it. Like if there's one nugget of advice or a gem you could drop for them right now.
Yeah. So there's so many, just to pick one, but I would say be yourself. The most important thing is to be yourself, to find that authentic part of you, that the things that you really want and have joy in life, because I'm pretty sure that's more than just, you know, smoking, drinking a beer. There's things that light you up, that add to your life, that you just light up, those things that you had when you were a kid that are just magic, just get your blood pumping. You want to go, go, go. That's the kind of stuff that you want to tap into and reconnect with. And the way to get there, the first thing, the most important thing, is to pay attention, self-awareness. You have to slow down. It's hard. It's not easy. Everything in, you know, my culture here in US, it's like, work hard, go fast. You need more, 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 more. It's just like sensory overload. So you need to take some time and just quiet all that stuff out and say, what am I thinking? What am I really thinking? And so it just starts with being curious, asking why, and paying attention. And then that you might start to link some of those things. Those dark thoughts might come up to the surface, and then, you know, you can start dealing with that like I did. But yeah, it's easy to just go through life on autopilot. That's what the brain wants to do. It wants to simplify things and just keep doing the same thing, even if it kills you. So it's about like getting to know who you are and listening to the thoughts you're having and then questioning those thoughts. And then you can start to tap into imagination. Imagine what you want. Use that creativity. Like, what would my life look like if I didn't do this? Have that vision. But it's about being yourself, because that's like the hardest thing in life, I think. Everyone's telling you what to be. So to be yourself is like huge act of rebellion. I had a real chip on my shoulder with smoking and partying. I thought I was being a rebel and sticking it to the man. But actually the biggest like rebellious thing is just to be yourself. Like, tell everybody that's your problem and do what feels right for you.
That is the hardest thing to do. And many of us think that that's exactly what we're doing. But if we get quiet like you said, get real with ourselves. Pay attention. Are we doing what we want to do? Are we being true to ourselves, or are we just playing and acting out a script that somebody else already wrote? And like you, from the very beginning, we come out of the womb and you're slapped with this label, with that label. When you get into school, the teachers tell you this and that. And then you get into the work field, and then your bosses are telling. So you have all these labels. I'm this, I'm that, I'm this. But like the old, what was it? Alice in Wonderland, the Cheshire Cat. Who are you?
Yes, I love that.
Who are you? And I love that you said you have to turn it back in and just get honest with yourself, be aware, and start paying attention. This is just to go back to old, to ancient texts. A lot of old myths, parables, tales from religious texts to old Hindu texts, and even just stories. A lot of times, and you can take it in different ways, but I see it as, you have, like, say, for instance, in the Bible, you have sometimes when Moses, when he received the Ten Commandments and he heard the voice of God, what did he have to do? He had to get away from everybody, go up into isolation in Mount Sinai, and that's where he was able to hear the voice of God. Ralph Emerson, he says something to the effect of, when you get to this quiet place, when you turn it inward, when you're in solitude, in silence, that is when you can hear, like many other people say it in different ways, the whisper of God. And that is, like we were talking about, the intuition, your heart. That is the true you speaking. But you can only hear that away from everything, all distractions, all the white fuzz that is outside trying to pull you this way and pull you that way. You have to pay attention, get quiet, and take heed to what you hear, feel, and what comes out, because that's the real you speaking. You just have to pay it some attention and pay it some respect.
Yeah. And I mean, you're also going to hear those thoughts, those dark thoughts that we don't want to listen to. And that's okay. I have learned to accept those. I think that I was caught in this kind of like good guy, bad guy worldview, where it's like, I just want to be a good guy, but really I'm a bad guy. And kind of was like, felt like I was just trying to blend in, but there was something wrong with me. And then I realized that there are no good guys and bad guys. Mm. We all have it in us. We all have the bad guy and the good guy in us. And that's what all those stories about those battles, that's the battle inside. And so I learned to accept the bad guy parts, and that's okay.
Yeah, sometimes you need that. Need that in life. When you need some pushback, you need to be able to stand up for yourself, some righteous anger. That's when it comes into play, and you can go ahead and allow that to have some room and some space to express itself.
Yeah, and emotions, they're not bad too with the anger. I used to feel like that every time I had anger. I was like, oh man, that's bad. Push it away. No. Smoke up, drink, whatever, make that go away. And I realized having a kid is just like, anger is a very, very natural emotion. Babies come out, they're angry. You know, it's just part of being human. It's not that big of a deal. Just accept it, let it go. You can move through it. It goes away so much quicker if you just live it instead of fight it. That's when it gets stuck in you. So that's what I found for myself anyway.
How long has it been since you've published the book? Because it is available. So how long has it been out?
I published in August.
Okay. Have you got any feedback from anyone saying, wow, you know what? I really like where you went with this.
Yeah. People are resonating with it. And what I was surprised by is that I wrote it about smoking cigarettes, but people are able to apply it to whatever they're going through in their life. So they're like, oh, this works for smoking weed. This works for vaping. This works for chewing. You know, it's not like this is just smoking. It's that whole addiction framework.
Addiction.
Yeah.
I dig that part of bringing the power back to the individual. You're empowering people. They do have a choice, and they can create new realities. They can create new experiences, and they can break old programs and conditions.
Yeah, we can control our inner world. We can't control what happens to us, but we can control the way we react and the way we let it run our lives and the choices we make. So that was a big deal for me.
100%. We can. Yeah. You can't change that. Like many people, they're out protesting and we're fighting for all these different reasons and causes and trying to change the world, but fail to just what's going on inside you.
Well, that's how you change the world. You change you.
Amen.
Yeah.
No, you're right. I really like your attitude and your mind frame, Jesse. It's been really refreshing to hear, because the whole synchronicity, because it seems like the last few people that I've connected with, it's just all, I mean, as much as I love, I've always been a fan of the underdog. That was the whole point of me doing the podcast. I like to hear people's stories of overcoming trials and tribulations, because I've been there and it hits home for me. And so, but it's also been a learning experience for me too. And the connections, even though we're strangers, but just to hear your story and to speak with you personally, and a lot of what you said, well, I have been just thinking back on my own situation. And like I mentioned, with still the fling that I've kept with the alcohol and getting honest about it and everything. And it's just a lot of that is starting to iron out. And that's because I've gotten honest with myself. And I was being real about the relationship that I had with it, because it's, like I said, it's been over a month since that little episode, and then since I started to put a new practice into my life, and with that practice, just my mindset, my being, a few times, just to share this little thing, just with the whole breath work, like I've had some sessions where it just felt as if I just was cleansed from the inside out, like my body was, somebody just stuck a hose in there and just flushed out every all this debris, this toxicity, these poisons, and I felt like it just was flushed out of me. And so, not to say that I'm a holy man or everything, but it seems like there's a different vibration or a different energy level. And I'm afraid now that, and that's not a reason, it's not a fear factor why I don't want to touch any alcohol, but I feel as if that's going to kill where I'm at right now, and I don't want that. I like where I'm at. I like how I feel, the clarity, even the emotions. And like you said, the dark things that come up, because we like to use substances and vices to mask that and to get away from it. But sometimes it just enhances it. It doesn't numb it, because then you start getting, you start to go down this dark hole, depending on what your vice is, or you just start feeling guilty and shameful after you go back to it. So yeah, I just wanted to say that the ability to be of being able to talk with people and to hear their stories and how that's been even helping me in my own process and journey, because I'm still evolving, I'm maturing, but it's been a great ride. And so I really appreciate you sharing your journey, your whole take on life and your view, because it's been really refreshing to hear.
Oh, same. I love connecting with people that know what I'm talking about here. It almost seems like you have to go through some of that pain, some of that hardship to get down with this stuff. I don't know why it has to be that way, but
yeah,
it's just what I've seen. So
even going back to the old tales, the myths and everything, there's a lot of talk of they go down to the underworld, to Hades, to come back a new woman, a new man, a new individual, a new person. And so that's part of the process. It's part of the show.
you lose something to gain something.
Like you look at nature, you look at certain animals. That's why some traditions or some cultures, they hold the snake or some of those reptiles or just those creatures, they hold them to a certain height because of the whole fact of the snake just shedding old skin, and in the process of just, like you said, you're losing some of yourself, but then you're gaining something in return. It's just the cycle of the birth, the life, death, and rebirth cycle, like the Buddhist, the will, what is it, the will of life. Yeah. Goodness, I felt like I was not in a confession, but with the whole alcohol and everything, you know.
No, I love hearing this. Thank you so much for being vulnerable. Yeah. It really helps me connect.
Yeah, and that's another thing too, with that, just accepting that and being accountable for it, because as much as I talk about it, I mean, I'm not a spring chicken anymore. I've been through like we've been through our life experiences and our journey and everything, but just also that being able to talk about that, because I would, for the longest, I just said, oh, I don't have a problem, whatever it was, addiction. Like I'm just a functioning alcoholic, or I'm a functioning addict. Even just saying an addict or you know, I always had to justify it or say it in a different way, but now I'm able to accept that. But it's like you said, it's not who I am. It's not my personality, and it's definitely an old story. And so this is something this is a new path that we're both on, and you have the you also have, you know, if you'd like to talk about that before, because we're, you know, I know you've been gracious enough to spend a good amount of your time and day with us to share your experience, your heart. And but you have a YouTube channel. You have a, like, say, if anybody wants to reach out to you, get in touch with you, get in contact with you, how can they do that? What do you have going these days as far as, I know you have your book, but anything else?
Yeah, so you can find me at honoryourheart.net. That's my website up there, and I'm selling my book up on there. And I also have started a community membership for this reason. So people can get together and talk. So, because sometimes, you know, people want to go off and do their own thing. That was kind of my style. But other folks, they want to get together. They want to have people that they can relate to and connect to and get support from. And so I've started this membership. It's got people going through the same thing you're going through. I'm there to talk to. You can email me anytime and I'll get back to you and we can talk things through, because yeah, this stuff can be kind of heavy, can be kind of confusing. Like, esoteric is the word I hear sometimes. You know, it's mm-hmm. kind of hard to hold on to and bring into your own life and incorporate. And like I said, it took me a long time. It took me 5 years to really understand what this stuff meant and actually see it in my life and apply it. So it's a way to kind of get a little bit more help along the way. Along with the book.
Okay, cool.
I'm also on social media. I put up, you know, videos where I talk about things, and love hearing from you guys in the comments and getting feedback and see what's going on with you, because it's definitely a two-way street for me. I don't like playing this guru up on high. Yeah. I want to hear from people and connect to people and learn from you.
Mm-hmm. Each one teach one. Yeah, I always say that. It's a two-way street. If you have something to say or anything to add to it, it's all about keeping the lines of communication open, because once you do what some dogmas or religions do and say, this is final and that's that, then there's no room to grow. It's just, that's a good way to just Boy. Shut off anything, anything contradicting. You know, that's not a good place to be. I was going to ask you about the community. Do you guys have online or virtual meetups once a week? How does that work out?
Yeah. So there's like an online forum, kind of like a Facebook group, but you don't have to go on Facebook and get distracted by 5 million things. You can just go on there and talk to people about what you're going through with smoking and going through with the inner work. And then I got journal prompts to help you kind of sit with those thoughts, kind of question things, see what's going on. Because journaling is a lot easier to be honest with. It's just kind of amazing. You know, you write down, you're like, oh, I didn't even know I was thinking that. You know, it's a way for you to kind of like consolidate what's going on in your head. And then we're going to do a live event every month.
All right.
So
on.
That we
okay.
all get together and do a practice or listen to a story or a meditation, just a way to connect and anchor into some of the practices I line in the book, because they're kind of intimidating. You know, I grew up in the Midwest. First time I did yoga or heard about yoga, I'm like, what in the world? You know, it felt ridiculous to me, and it helped me so much. You know, it's kind of hard to try these new weird things, but they can actually really help you reconnect with yourself and feel better.
Be open to it. Yeah. And these are ancient practices. It's like, you don't have to reinvent the wheel. These things, they've been around for millennia, and they haven't lost their value. It's good to see, though, a lot of that is being accepted and people are more and more open to it. I guess that just goes to show you where society is in general. You know, we're looking for something, we're in need of something.
Mm-hmm.
And what we have right now isn't cutting it. It's not filling the void.
Yeah. We need the heart.
Yeah, the heart. There you go. I like that. I really like that, the idea that, especially the with your community, the Honor Your Heart. Of course, I told you that from the beginning. I like the concept behind it, and then when you explained it, also that makes perfect sense, and I really resonated with the whole message of it and the community with the once a month online. So it'll be like people check in, and then you're just kind of, like you said, somebody's leading a meditation or however it goes. You people are just connecting and building together. The links, your information, I'm going to include those in the show notes. And Jesse, I really appreciate your time, your words, your perspective on life. And I'm happy to hear that you're in a much better place, healthy, you're clear, you have a good inner dialogue with yourself, and then you're there, you know, you have that beautiful bond with your daughter. That's really great to hear. And it's, you know, it's something that really refreshes my spirit. But if you have anything you'd like to leave off with, you said a lot, and I'm sure this is going to help anybody who's coming across this. And it doesn't have to be a nicotine addiction, but just addiction in general and that whole mentality and mindset. But if you have any final words or anything you'd like to leave off with, feel free.
Yeah, I think you've touched on it a few times, just that it's kind of a hard thing to take responsibility for the way your life's looking. Sometimes it can be easier to blame people or, blame the disease, whatever have you, society, put all this outside of yourself. But when you're able to take that responsibility, you're not taking the blame, you're taking the power back. You're taking the ability to change, and you can actually just expand yourself, enrich your life. It just opens up things for you. So just a really nice thing to give yourself the choice so that you can choose something that you want for yourself.
Awesome. You wrapped it up. Couldn't have did it any better. So we're going to leave off on that note. Thank you again so much for your time. All the best to you, to your daughter. I'd like to check out the community and see all of the good stuff that you have for people to just empower themselves and better themselves. So yeah, I appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thank you. Take care.
I hope you all enjoyed today's conversation. Honor your heart. That's a book from the heart and the soul, and the experiences Jessie's accumulated over the years in dealing with her own addictions, her struggles, and countless failed attempts with trying to quit. It's a small book, but it packs a punch, and she shares the process in working to find the causes of an addiction, whatever it may be, and not just aimed at trying to treat the symptoms. So if you're in the fire right now, dealing with your own addictions, and like Jessie, tried everything from A to B, we're trying to quit, trying to shake it, trying to break it, but you keep falling back, then I'd encourage you to check out what Jessie's put together. You can find her links and information in the show notes. And something I found really cool with what she's doing is including a few things along with the purchase of her book. So you're not just getting a book, she also has, and she talked about it during our conversation, an MP3 audio affirmations list, a playlist to help with your resolve to break your addiction, to change your mindset, and to help you along the way. There's affirmation cards to motivate and remind, plus support your change in attitude and new direction in life. You get access to live group sessions to walk you through the process described in her book. She even is including a 30-day free trial for the community membership that she spoke about at the very end. Sometimes we need that extra support from people who have walked those common grounds. You don't have to do it alone. There's power in numbers. So I thought it was worth mentioning because Jessie's message and all of the resources she's made available is something that I could get behind. For one, because I know what it's like to struggle with addiction. I've sat in the belly of the beast for a long time. I know what it feels like. So I encourage anybody who's going through it right now, or even knows somebody who's going through it, to check out her link and to look into some of those resources that she has available. Jessie, keep on spreading that good word. All the best to you, your daughter, the rest of your family. You are a giant amongst us. Then a big thank you, as always, to everybody on the other end, wherever you're at listening to us, however you listen to us. Appreciate you each and every time tuning in. If you ever want to get back to us, reach out to us, let us know what's on your mind. You know where to find us. You can check out the website. You can shoot us an email. You can leave us a voice note, or you can find us on any one of the social media platforms that we're available on. It's been good. It's always great to share these connections and to celebrate our wins, our victory, our new chapters, our new stories. So to anybody struggling, feeling down, don't be too hard on yourself. Every day is a new day to start making some changes. It can start small, and watch those small steps turn into something grand and great. We don't have to play that role as passive victims where everything in life just seems to be happening to us. We need to consider that we are the architects of our reality. It's about time to get back in the driver's seat and to start taking control of your own route, your own journey, and your own destination. You guys be safe out there. Stay healthy. Be sane. We're going to catch up and do this again real soon. Before I go, I'd like to remind you that if you would like to be a part of this show and share your story, or even a story of someone in your life that has impacted you in a positive way, you can always reach out to us via email. We'd be happy to connect. Until next time, and very soon, peace.
I'm looking for a sign to know I'm on the right road. Ain't seen no signs since Jericho.